A moment later, Corzin appeared at the window. He was shaking so badly he could barely stand, his eyes half closed, teeth chattering. He had no blanket around him, and there were puke stains on the front of his shirt. His gold earring was missing, too. "Corzin, Corzin," I hissed. "What ails you? What can I do?" He did not hear me, or could not. He was insensible of his own name and where he was. Dibdin joined Corzin at the window. "Terrible, ain't it? How fevers and pox tear through this place." There was hollow laughter in the cell. "Give him his hat back," I said, "and a blanket. Is he getting his rations?" He did not answer me. That was an answer in itself. The prison was not a place of shared hardship anymore. It was a hole of desperation. "You bloody beast," I swore. "How dare you let him starve?" The words flew out of my mouth without pause. "Who are you to reprimand me, girl?" he snarled, putting his face up to the bars. His breath stank of rotting teeth and snot pulled at the edge of his nostrils. "He's a slave. He will not be treated the same as free men." He wiped his nose with the back of his hand. "But you can remedy that," he said, "with ease." I tried to keep my voice steady. "How so?" Corzin was seized by a fit of coughing so violent I feared his ribs would crack. He choked on his spittle and fought for breath, then finally relaxed back into his stupor, leaning against the window. Dibdin glanced back at the other men in the cell before continuing. "Our Captain Morse is on parole, lodged at the Golden Hill Tavern, we hear. Go there. Tell him the men have fever and pox. One of our lads, Bridgebane, has a father in Piscataway with money and influence. If the captain can get word to him, Bridgebane's father could arrange for a proper physician to attend us here." Corzin coughed again and moaned. Sweat glistened on his forehead. "And the doctor would see to my brother," I said. Dibdin hesitated, then gave a nod.
"Aye."
"And he gets a blanket and food." Dibdin said something to a man I couldn't see. A blanket appeared on Corzin's shoulders. Corzin clutched it around himself. "And his hat." My voice was ice. Dibdin removed the hat and placed it on Corzin's head.
"Lay him down," he instructed. "On the rushes, not the bare floor."
Someone helped Corzin away from the window. I had no choice. I handed the jam-covered burnt scones up to the window. Dibdin stuck the first one in his mouth, then passed the others to the men who suddenly crowded the window. "If he dies, you'll not see me again," I warned.
"Understood," he said.
I found Captain Morse carrying out rubbish for the tavern keeper. He was a well-fed man wearing the brown coat trimmed with white that signified he was a prisoner of war. There was a big gap between his front teeth, but they looked clean enough. He joined me in the shadows of the alley and listened as I quickly explained my mission.
"I'll try to get word to Bridgebane's family tonight. It is against all the laws of wars to treat prisoners so badly."
He paced angrily.
"How often can you stop here?"
"Every morning."
"Good. Tell Dibdin I'll see what I can do to ease their suffering, though I fear it will not be enough."
"My brother is amongst the prisoners," I said. "He's ill. Can you?"
"Can I see to it that he is given his share of whatever Bridgebane provides? I surely will. Your brother was calm and brave during the final battle. He's a true soldier."
The crow of a rooster interrupted him. The sun was fighting through the leaden clouds. I picked up the buckets. "I have to hurry." He nodded.
"Thank you for your help. My apologies, but I do not know your name."
"I am called Sal."
"Do you carry a last name as well, Sal?"
I hesitated. According to Madam, my surname was Lockton, but it tasted foul in my mouth. I shook my head. He smiled.
"Just Sal, then. Good day to you, just Sal."
Lucky for me, the overcast morn caused the other servants to sleep past their normal time. By the time Hannah and Mary staggered up from the cellar, I had the porridge bubbling and the tea steeping. I could not eat nor drink a thing, for my belly was tied up with fear. My thoughts chased round and round my brain pan. I could not visit the prison daily. I was sure to be caught and punished. But I had to visit the prison daily, Corzine's life depended on it. But someone would see me and was sure to remember the mark on my face.
Word would get back to Madam, and she would tell Colonel Hawkins, and he would set someone to follow me, and Captain Morse would be flogged for passing on messages, and the prisoners in Corzine's cell would all be hung and buried in the pit.
When I thought what they might do to me, I ran to the necessary and had me a good puking. But the next day, I made my way up there again, food for the prisoners, water for the Locktons, and every once in a while, a message to the gap-toothed man in the brown coat at the Golden Hill Tavern. A few nights later, there was a terrible hullabaloo between Madam and the master when he announced at supper that he was planning to travel on the next ship to London. He would carry messages to Parliament, conduct his own business, and likely return to New York by the summer. Madam was not pleased. First, she argued that he ought not go. Then she argued, yes, he should go, and he should take her with him. When he refused, she threw a goblet in the fireplace and carried on so loudly that the master and Colonel Hawkins finally called for the carriage and left for a tavern. Madam dosed herself with strong wine after that and went to bed. That night, the temperatures fell so far below freezing that the biggest fire could not keep away the chill. I moved my pallet as close to the hearth as I dared and sat with all my clothes, my cloak and my blanket wrapped around me. 'Twas so cold I could not sleep. General Washington and his men were holed up in Morristown. Folks said they were in desperate need of stockings and food. I could scarce credit how hungry men with frozen feet could win a war. They were fools to even try. I waited as the clock first chimed 11 times, then 12, watching the firelight and trying not to ponder. When I got up to add wood to the fire, my feet wandered themselves to the pantry and my hands pulled the loose boards there. Under the board were some sheets of newsprint I had saved, the lead piece from the statue of King George, my seeds, and the book given me by the stationer. I carried the book to my warm pallet and quietly untied the twine and removed the paper wrapping. I opened the cover. A fellow named Thomas Paine wrote the little book. He called it Common Sense. Mama always said that common sense was far from common. That's why it was so special when you found it. The first sentence in the book did not seem to contain any. Some writers have so confounded society with government as to leave little or no distinction between them, whereas they are not only different, but have different origins. Society is produced by our wants, and government by our wickedness. It took four readings to figure out the meaning, which I took to be that the life of folks is different than the world what rules over them. Paine sure did dance a long time with the notion before he said it. I closed the book and longed for Robinson Crusoe, still stranded in the study where Colonel Hawkins was asleep. I dared not rescue him. I opened the book again and attacked the next sentence.